P-minus 52. Ford McCarthy Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. Having listened to much understandable but fruitless contemplation, William Godfrey had heard enough. Emma, for all we know at the moment, Sanctuary might be New Kerguelen at some point in the future or the past. But really, for our purposes and immediate concerns, it's all academic right now. Emma didn't take offense to the dismissive words, not entirely disagreeing with them herself, and encouraged Godfrey to go on. Since we know that when is a question we have to think about, where isn't all that important, the ICA chairman continued. At some point, we can hopefully get to the bottom of this, because the aliens on Sanctuary might even know something about this and be able to tell us as soon as we ask. If Leisha can safely go back to fetch Billy, as I know he'll wish to, if it's at all possible, he may return to Earth hours later with a fuller understanding than we could achieve through a lifetime of speculation and attempted analysis. Clark cleared his throat, essentially reminding everyone of his presence. As large as he was, his position on the edge of the couch had left him out of the others' view as they conversed. If we're all just saying what comes into our heads without worrying how sensible it is, he began. And I don't mean anything dismissive by that. It just seems like you guys are saying things out loud that you'd normally think about first. Anyway, what I'm thinking on the subject of how we could find out more about this goes back to something that we've all thought about before. Remember the elders that were really radios the architects left on New Kerguelen so they could communicate with the messengers from far away, and that the messengers now call the machines? Obviously, Dan said, speaking for everyone. Clark's chest heaved quickly out, slowly back in, as he took a deep breath. Okay. So remember how certain people thought we could use those broken machines as a basis for building our own radios for talking to the architects? Timo, you... That was all hypothetical, Dan said. That was before we even knew there was a second gate, let alone found out it was a time gate. But maybe, I don't know, this is literally just thinking out loud again. Maybe if down the line we do have some kind of existential problem we literally can't solve on our own, and the architects have never made themselves known, a radio like that could come in handy. There are so many assumptions needed to make that a plausible scenario, though, and we have literally no idea how far away they are. Besides, right now, I would sure as hell settle for some far-off hypothetical problem being the biggest thing for us to worry about. Phil and Masood are dead. Slater has lost her mind and gone in with Cole and Geller. The fallout from everything around this damn gate has brought panic and riots to Earth and flames of destruction to New Birchwood. And there's Billy, who could be lost forever in the past or the future, for all we know. Emma walked to her husband's side, placing a kind hand on his shoulder. Dan, no one expects you to be able to process this any more easily than you are. This isn't something we can look at on a piece of paper and plot out a plan of action to tackle. This is a perfect storm. There's nothing we can do about Masood anymore, just like there's nothing we can do for Phil, except make sure they didn't die in vain. When the time comes that we can do anything about that. Geller will pay. Cole will pay, and it sickens me to say this after all the progress I thought we'd made in recent years, but Slater will pay too. Masood would be alive if they hadn't worked together on the Dordaloo Tepe leak, and the timing of that makes me wonder if they were all in it together and trying to get evidence of some unspecific secret from Phil's place, just like they did from Masood's room. That's on our plate because there's no one else who can hold them accountable. But that's not all that's on the plate in front of us. Or maybe I should say that's not the only plate in front of us. We didn't ask for all this, but we've got more than one plate to deal with right now. Although Dan was physically soothed to some extent by Emma's touch, always welcome, her words had less of an effect. To some extent, in fact, her atypical lack of laser focus made him feel more overwhelmed than he already had. Not because Emma had rambled incoherently in a manner that suggested she was totally overwhelmed herself, and not because she had raised any new, unsettling points, but simply because her lack of precise clarity had killed his hope that she might have some insight that would have cut through the abstractions and presented a pathway forward. This wasn't a fair thing to expect of anyone, But Emma had so often presented strategies and identified solutions that no one else would have seen in a million years that Dan couldn't help but expect the world of her. Today, however, even Emma McCarthy was stumped. Upon consideration, the equally stumped Dan considered that one of the biggest problems staring him in the face, as best as he could define it, was that his current overwhelming situation effectively presented no single and concentrated problem at all. He wasn't trying to reveal an explosive truth, as in the days of the IDA leak. He wasn't trying to contain an explosive secret, as in the aftermath of the hoax exposé. And he was no longer actively seeking to cure his daughter of an ailment that a kindly alien doctor had assured him was in fact a gift. What now stared Dan in the face, presenting no obvious starting point towards any kinds of solutions, were the complex and complicated responsibilities of somehow spearheading the restoration of order to two worlds in chaos. The unprecedented and unimagined revelation about the third world, which now demanded some of his attention, on which his good friend was unknowingly isolated from the rest of humanity by time as well as space, only served to make the whole thing even more opaque. Emma stepped away slightly, only far enough to look Dan squarely in the eye. But there is a way forward, okay? Even if we had 10 plates in front of us and an elephant on each of them, you know what they say about how you eat an elephant, right? One bite at a time. Right now, we just have to pick which plate to start with, based on which one is going to, I'm kind of stretching the metaphor here, but based on which one is going to expire first. Leisha was supposed to be going to get Billy tomorrow night, but we don't even know if time passes at the same rate, so tomorrow night for us could be too early or too late. That's for Leisha to worry about, though, because obviously there's no way you're going back, and obviously the messengers are going to be better placed than us to analyze their own data about this crazy gate and whatever markers or clues the passage left in the readings. What's for us to worry about first? Godfrey chimed in. To your mind, of course. If they haven't been arrested by then and are still stupid enough to want to face any of us in public, we do have the special Focus 2020 panel with Slater, Cole, and Geller tomorrow. I want to be there, and I want you to be there. I see that as the moment for us to pin everything on them, with Leisha at our side, and to show the video footage of Phil's death, which we can so easily tie to Masoud's. I'll get my top men on the job in Buenos Aires to find dirt that'll stick, because Cole is far sloppier than, well, than I would be, if I were ever inclined to do something as heinous as he has. That's tomorrow, though. I'm asking about tonight, Emma. Before I share my view on it, do you think it's the right time for Dan and I to step back into the public eye in a bid to calm things down, or do you think we should let the wounds breathe, for lack of a better term, and catch the scoundrels by surprise tomorrow night, if they're only expecting you and Clark on the show? Emma thought for a few seconds, digesting everything Godfrey had said. I don't think we should do anything tonight, she said, tilting her head towards the projector screen, which was muted but still airing ACN. It showed live scenes from Dortulu Tepe, where Turkish police officers were symbolically and very deliberately standing shoulder to shoulder with guards who wore ICA emblazoned uniforms. The news cycle has shifted, she said. Dan glanced at the TV, momentarily relieved by this, at least. They're on the defensive, and they just made the biggest mistake since Cole leaked Il Diavolo, Emma continued. I know this isn't a game, Godfrey, but that old adage to never interrupt your enemy when they're making a mistake holds truer now than ever. Just look at the rolling headlines. The riots in Europe have died down tonight, and when darkness arrives here, it's going to be the same story. People are worried about you and Dan, and people are worried about the nonsense Geller fed them when she showed the carvings, but there isn't going to be the violent mass panic we saw yesterday after you first disappeared. And if there is, the first move would probably be for me to address the media again and say you're still helping the messengers with an emergency on New Kerguelen. White lies can be stability's best friend at times like this. At that point, Dan caught sight of William Godfrey uncharacteristically lifting his phone from his pocket. Dan was intrigued even before the ICA chairman reacted to what he saw on the screen. So rare was it for Godfrey to look at his phone like this in company, unless it was ringing to announce a call. This wasn't simply a generational thing. Many, and perhaps even most people of Godfrey's age, spent as much time with a phone in their hand as they did without one, and Dan wasn't alone in having noticed it. Godfrey was almost never seen texting, and anyone he ever cared to communicate with knew of his aversion to doing so, which made Dan wonder who was contacting him now. Someone clearly was, given that Godfrey had lifted the phone so suddenly and spent a few seconds reading from it before performing any gestures on the touchscreen. "Everything okay?" Emma asked as Godfrey scrolled to read the rest of a message that had widened his eyes and stiffened his shoulders. The ICA chairman's feet answered before his voice, turning in an instant and setting off towards Emma's office. "Leisha," he called. "We have to leave. Right now. All of us." Clark rushed to take several strides, each dwarfing Godfrey's, and caught him less than halfway to the office. By then, however, Leisha and Tara were at the door to see what all the commotion was about. "Leisha is the only one who is supposed to be going back," Dan said, looking at Godfrey's urgency-tinged expression. "What are you talking about, we?" Godfrey tried to raise his hands, the only thing he could move during the brief seconds in which Clark instinctively restrained him. The elder and stronger McCarthy brother quickly relinquished his grip, which was never any firmer than necessary, and gave Godfrey some space to explain himself. With one of his newly freed hands, and seemingly with no grudge against a man whose sometimes overly keen protective instincts had saved his own life not too long ago, Godfrey turned his phone towards the group. "All of us need to leave," he said, drawing a circle with the hand that wasn't holding his phone. "But not to there. I don't mean that anyone needs to leave Earth to save Billy. I mean that we need to leave Birchwood to protect ourselves." "Everyone in close," Clark bellowed. Leisha included, they followed his lead. "Godfrey, what the hell is going on?" Godfrey continued to hold his phone outwards as he explained for the benefit of those who couldn't read the words. "Slater is sending agents here to look for Dan and Tara and to detain Emma and Clark if they don't find them. I don't know what the hell they're thinking, but this is real and it's happening right now and we all need to be gone before they get here." Emma turned to Leisha. "You heard him. We'll make sense of this when we're safe." "Phil's farmhouse?" the startled alien asked everyone at once. Some nodded, some yelled in affirmation, and the youngest slept innocently and obliviously in her mother's arms. Within seconds, each and every one of them disappeared in a blinding flash.